Brayton Gall, the Cover 2 podcast on the radio each morning in Nashville, 102.5 The Game, Athlon Sports as well. And Brayton, there is a Tennessee SEC win to ask you about for the first time this season. The Vols beat Mississippi State. What do you take away from that win? What can it mean for Tennessee moving forward to the second half of the season, which does begin with Alabama this weekend?
Yeah, just ignore the next weekend. Just ignore it altogether. Don't worry about it. Just block it out. And listen, you know, we talked about the Chattanooga game earlier in the year and how, you know, just some confidence, just some positivity, some attitude in a locker room can make a really big difference. So it really kind of is unfortunate that on the heels of a win like that, you're going to have to play Alabama. It'd be nice to have gotten Alabama out of the way and then go Mississippi State, South Carolina, bang, bang, you know, and maybe build some momentum. So you hope that any confidence, for example, I don't know, like a true freshman quarterback might have gained, you know, is going to be probably put on hold against Alabama. So which is hard to you know, sort of deal with moving forward. But defensively, really excellent showing. I'm not sure, and I don't mean to, like, use any cold water here. I'm not trying to. But I do think Mississippi State is in a pretty rough spot right now, trending in a really bad direction. So it doesn't matter. You take it. You enjoy it. You build on it. You look at your defense and you say, all right, we made good plays. We made smart plays here. You look at your quarterback and, you know, Garantano made a couple of throws in relief and Maurer made, obviously, on those two third downs in the fourth quarter. Nice to see Tyler Byrd do something after his career, which is a nice moment there. And you look at the mistakes Maurer made in the red zone and you say, can we correct those with good coaching? And I think you can. So there's plenty to build on. It's just, you know, you're going to have to wait a couple of weeks for that to happen.
Well, what can they work on, you know, this week, taking the lessons learned from Mississippi State and giving Bama their best shot? I mean, Juwan Jennings, he met with the media yesterday, and he's like, man, if you can't get excited about playing the number one team in the country at night in their stadium, then why are you even playing this game? So I thought that was cool of him to say, but what can they logistically work on for the games that are going to be more winnable on the schedule?
I mean, I don't mean this as a joke at all, but, like, we've seen Alabama ruin seasons by destroying personnel, right? Like, we saw Florida State walk into a game against Alabama, I think number 3 in the nation a couple of years ago, and they walked out without their starting quarterback. Like, Alabama can destroy your depth chart just on accident, right? Like, so I don't mean to be flippant at all, but be healthy. Like, come out of it healthy. You need your young core players that you want to get experience over the course of the last month and a half of the season. You need them on the field. You can't afford, you know, Juwan Jennings, again, this sounds really flippant, but Juwan Jennings probably the best player on the team right now. If you could clone him and have 84 more of him, it'd be perfect. You might actually, you might contend for the SEC East, but, you know, if Juwan Jennings gets hurt, that doesn't hurt Tennessee next year, right? I know this is a really shrewd way of looking at it, but you've got to stay healthy. I mean, can you work on toughness, physicality, fundamentals, recognition, especially for, you know, safeties, linebackers, quarterback, 100%. You can gain incredibly meaningful experience from going up against a team that is coached and developed and hand-selected by Nick Saban. There's no question about it. But number one for me is health. I mean, we've seen Alabama just take people out, and it's just what happened. It's not, you know, it just happened. So, you've got so many good quality learning opportunities, and Mississippi State gave you some positivity. What you need is to continue to build on that in the other games. And again, that's Kentucky, UAB, Vanderbilt, South Carolina. I think Missouri is pretty darn good, so I'm not sure I'm giving Tennessee a huge opportunity to go on the road and win that game. But the other ones are winnable, and what you need is your complement of players. And you want them to be growing and developing into next year, and you need them on the field to do that. So, again, I listen, if anything outside of that in a positive – is house money. I mean, you're going up against number one team in the nation who has won, what, 13 in a row, 12 in a row against Tennessee. They are vastly outmatched on the road. There's, like, anything outside of perfect health above that, I think, is honestly house money. You know, I know Josh Dobbs had the lead in the fourth quarter down in Tuscaloosa a couple years ago. This isn't that kind of team, right? So perfect health is number one on my priority list.
Brayton Gall is with us, has the Cover 2 podcast on the radio every day in Nashville, 102.5 The Game. Which team in the SEC is the best through 7 weeks of the college football season?
Oh, I think Alabama's the best team in America, but that's more of a safe bet thing, right? Like, what are you going to who are you going to take? I still think the four true freshmen starting in the front seven for Alabama is something, frankly, if I'm Jeremy Pruitt and Jim Chaney, I'm targeting this week, right? That's where Alabama's given up some chunk plays. They haven't run the ball as well. LSU is giving up far more defensively than I think we anticipated, but their offense is obviously, for the first time in over a decade, off the charts good. So I think Georgia's far better than it played last week. I don't think that's an accurate representation. Most teams have that game in their schedule. It just doesn't normally happen at home to a 24-point underdog. So, I mean, my order would be Bama, LSU, Georgia in that order. Probably Florida and Auburn the next two, but probably a tier below. And it's all going to work itself out. I mean, it's with that South Carolina loss, what that's done is it's made everyone else have to be perfect. Like, you have to be perfect if you're Georgia. LSU, we knew, was going to have to be near perfect. If they lose to Alabama, they're going to have to go 11-1 and probably look good doing it to have a chance to get in. So it's taken out the opportunity for probably the two teams in Atlanta to both make the playoff, Georgia losing to South Carolina. Otherwise, those three, and then you throw – like, I thought Florida acquitted itself extremely well on the road in a really hostile environment. I don't think many teams could have put up 28 in that situation like they did. So, you tell me how you stop those receivers in Tua. You tell me, get every coordinator you want in America on the phone and tell me how you do it, because I don't know how you do it.
That's a good point. Does it open – if it closed the door on two teams in Atlanta making it to the playoff, did it leave the door open, though, for maybe a one-loss LSU or a one-loss Alabama, maybe the winner of that game and the loser both making the playoff?
I mean, 100%. I hate putting the cart before the horse on these types of debates, because the beauty, sort of the chaotic beauty of college football, is that everything has got this weird interconnectivity, right? LSU winning is good for Oklahoma, right? Like, that's what makes college football fun and weird. And, you know, LSU beat Texas, Oklahoma beat Texas, but so if LSU keeps winning, that makes Oklahoma look good, and around and round and round we go. I mean, you can go conference to conference, and so it's not just, you can't just look at any one individual situation and sort of say, this is the way it's going to be in or out. But if you told me that Bama finished 13-0 and LSU was 11-1, or vice versa, and the only loss that LSU has is on the road in Tuscaloosa to 13-0 Alabama, I don't know how you don't have one of the best cases in America to be in the playoff. Like, again, it's dependent on what happens to Oklahoma or Ohio State or Clemson or, you know, Oregon / Utah / you know, whoever in the Pac-12. You know, it's all dependent, but I don't know how. Like, it's almost setting up for that, right? Like, Georgia's hope now is that they have to run the table, beat Florida, beat Missouri, win in Atlanta, and they're guaranteed a spot, right? Like, that's how they get in. Their path is clear, but their margin for error is nothing. LSU might be able to go into Tuscaloosa and lose and still get in. And Alabama might be able to host LSU and lose and still get in. And probably be worthy of that. So I agree with your point. It's very similar to a couple of years ago when Bama was 11-1 and they got in and won the whole thing.
Hey, Braden, before you go, you are on the radio every day in Nashville. Reaction today and this week with Ryan Tannehill and at quarterback Marcus Mariota to the bench.
Yeah, listen, I think there's a lot of blame to go around. The quarterback himself, I mean, he was not good against Denver on Sunday. There's no arguing that. But he looked like a broken player to me. And what I'm finding fascinating, and I'm sure this happens with Tennessee fans and Butch Jones, you know, when they were picked to win the SEC at SEC Media Days, they were picked to win the East heading into, I believe, you guys correct me if I'm wrong here, because I'm getting all my years confused. I think that was 16 when Dobbs was a senior and Barnett was in his last year. They were picked to win the SEC East, and it wasn't really disappointing. Butch Jones was not a thing that Vols fans didn't like until they lost to South Carolina and the whole Jalen Hurd thing happened. That all the cliches that everybody hated, like they hated him after they started losing, right? Like, it doesn't change the reality of the first part, which was 5 wins, 7 wins, 9 wins, 9 wins, bowl win, bowl win, bowl win, right? Like, that was reality, and people liked it and enjoyed it until they didn't. And that's what I don't like about the conversation around Marcus Mariota, is that people are now coming up and saying, oh, he was never the answer, he was never any good. I completely disagree. The greatest increase in win total in franchise history from his rookie year to his second year, they went from 2 wins to 9 wins. They missed the playoff because he broke his leg against Jacksonville in the second to last week of the year. He's never been the same player since that time. Still managed to get the team to their first playoff berth in 10 years. He's the only quarterback, except for McNair, in a Titans uniform to ever win a playoff game. And then they fired the coach, brought in like the third and fourth and fifth coordinators, and now the offensive line has given up 30 sacks, 29 to be exact, in six games, which is like world record pace in the NFL. It's five sacks a game. I don't know how anybody can be expected to block. So he's not good now, but it doesn't change the fact that he was a pretty darn good quarterback for the first 3.5 years of his career. Even last year, they were a quarter away from making the playoffs against Indianapolis in week 17, and because he couldn't play with like 36 cracked vertebrae, a punctured lung, a plantar fasciitis, and who God knows what else, you know, he couldn't play. He took all the blame. So I think he's being the scapegoat right now. I would expect to see him back in the lineup at some point this year, because I don't think Tannehill's the answer. He's not any better, and the offensive line's not getting any better. It's an incredible. I think we're going to look back on the Mariota era in Nashville sports history and Titans and be fascinated with how it played out, just because of all the different things that have happened over the course of 5 years. And I don't frankly think it's a fair shake. I think he's a better player, excuse me, than how he was against. He looked like a broken player to me on Sunday, and he's not always been that. He takes the blame for some of that, but I think the organization owns a lot of that. I think the Titans have broken Marcus Mariota. You know, maybe half of the blame goes to the Titans organization.
Yeah, there's a lot to get figured out besides just that quarterback position. Braden Gall joins us every Wednesday right here on Sports 180 at Braden Gall on Twitter. Another big college football weekend coming up on the radio every morning, 102.5 The Game, and check out that Cover 2 podcast. Hey, Braden, we appreciate the time as always. Thank you, and we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, always fun hanging out, guys.